Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
President Donald Trump declaring online, the deal with the Islamic Republic of Iran is now complete, signaling a, quote, toll-free opening of the Strait of Hormuz and immediate removal of the United States naval blockade, which will be signed on Friday in Switzerland. Pakistan's prime minister, who helped broker the deal, sharing it includes the immediate and permanent termination of military operations on all fronts, including Lebanon.
Yeah, I'd say at this point, we're not sure exactly what's in the deal until they sign it, because you got to sign it to find out what's in it. Seems familiar. We've seen that before. But generally speaking, those are the broad brush outlines. Although from President Trump, it sounds like the Strait of Hormuz is going to open on Friday. So is it open now? Does it open on Friday when they sign it? I don't know. Does the frozen assets, do they unfreeze 30 days, nuclear material within 60 days, still discussing some of the details, no more fighting. So it's an announcement. Okay, he announced it on his birthday, and Iran confirmed that they've got a something, and it looks like it's the end of the war, and the question is now, well, what really are the details, and will it be better, more robust, less robust than the JCPOA that took place under Obama and that President Trump repeatedly said was a stupid and terrible poopy head deal and that we, got out of, and then we went to war, and did war get us anything better than what we had before?
A series of meetings over the next 60 days will deal with questions about how Iran will abandon its nuclear ambitions, with the U.S. set to eventually release $25 billion of Iran's frozen assets.
Which, that's going to happen. Okay, defenders of the president, Mark Wayne Mullen, Department of Homeland Security Secretary, talking on CNN State of the Union.
The president has made it very clear what he wants to do is tie the entire Middle East into the Abraham Accords. We understand that economic ties keeps countries from fighting among each other. When your economy is tied together, you're less likely to destroy your economy because of your dislike for someone's religion.
And that's been a basic premise that Trump has been aiming at across the region and in general. He's a deal maker. He's an a pro-business kind of person. He wants everybody to be involved in trade. Why would you want to be involved in trade and then also go and advocate for tariffs? Well, don't ask too many questions. But yeah, generally speaking, you want trade, because as long as there's trade, and this has, been kind of American international policy for several decades at least, but the idea is if we're partners with each other, then we're less likely to go to war with each other. And certainly in the Middle East, if you can, make people talk to each other, make them do business with each other, invest in other countries and they invest in ours, then, at a certain point, there's, like the idea of having international companies that exist across these boundaries. If you have a major company that does business in China and in the United States, and a war would affect them in both directions, well, they tend to lobby against or work towards there being a war. Same thing. Now, sometimes it can be a problem because they're also adverse to improving political situations where they should be. It's not like this is some magical wand that solves all of your international problems. It's just the idea that as long as people are doing commerce with each other, they're less likely to be shooting at each other. So let's get them doing commerce. Let's make there some kind of economic value to them to not fight. Because if they don't have that, then guess what? They fight. And he's right. That's generally been not just President Trump's view, but that's been the American view for a long time. President Obama on this week on ABC.
It's doubtful that any agreement that arises is going to be significantly different or a significant improvement from the deal that we had in the first place.
No, we don't know yet, so it's hard to say. It might be worse than the JCPOA. It might be better than JCPOA. It might be the same exact thing, except that we have now, you know, bombed them backwards 5 or 10 years in their infrastructure and their ability to give conventional shield to their nuclear weapons program. It might be that we've just created a sense of, you know, value on our side that the threat is real. It might be that, I mean, we don't know exactly. Of course, Obama was never, and his folks are never going to be ones to come out and say, yeah, we sucked at negotiating, dang it. And Trump is great. Of course, Trump's people are never going to say, no, we suck at negotiating, and all we got for this was exactly what Obama had in the past that we were never in favor of before. So, you know, you got to kind of not listen too much to the advocates on either side. But it's understandable that he would take that view. Michael Waltz, who used to be the National Security Advisor and is now the ambassador to the UN this week on ABC, responding to Obama.
Alien-enriched uranium has to go. Their support for terrorist proxies has to end. That has terrorized the entire Middle East.
Yeah, and if that happens, that would also be a significant improvement, because certainly under the JCPOA, the Obama-era deal, then you did not get an ending of Iran's destabilizing actions in the region, or their proxy support for people like the Houthis or, you know, Hezbollah or Hamas, you know, depending on which country or region you're talking about. And if that's all that happened, that would also be an improvement, if that's what takes place. And at least so far, it sort of has. Jack Reed sits on the Senate Armed Services Committee. Senator, Democrat.
We have spent billions of dollars. We've lost 14 personnel killed in action, hundreds wounded. And we've disrupted the world economy. And we're getting basically less than what we had under the JCPOA, which President Trump walked away from.
Yeah, it's been a major problem, you know, economically. Obviously, 14 troops lost on our side. Who knows how many on their side? You know, major disruption to shipping. Lots of money we've spent. And what did we get for it? Well, again, I think some of the details we're going to have to wait and see. You know, both sides are claiming victory. You know, the Iranians are claiming victory. We're claiming victory. That could either be a very bad deal or a very good deal, or, well, you know, who knows? And finally, Pete Hegseth saying, well, sure, I mean, even if the deal's not great, which it absolutely will, because my boss is the greatest ever. Just ask him. Pete Hegseth says there is a difference between now and then.
Well, we'll make sure the military option is there. And that's the big difference between this and JCPOA and the way Obama did it. Obama, they begged Iran for a deal, and we bombed Iran and then put in a blockade and then ran ships through and then have restarted when necessary to ensure that they come to the table for a great deal.
So again, you know, it's kind of like you tell a kid stop, you tell a kid stop, you tell a kid stop. For 47 years, you tell a kid stop. Meanwhile, they're killing people, including our people. And then finally, you spank them real good one time. And then you tell them stop. I mean, that's kind of where we're at. And the question, I mean, why the kid doesn't grow up for 47 years is a different question. But that's where we're at with Iran. And so, yeah, it's different now that we've directly attacked them significantly, shown our willingness to do something. I think also exposed our, you know, vulnerability and the world's vulnerability to them blockading that strait, or, you know, threatening to attack anything that comes through the strait. But if it sounds repetitive, I apologize, but I can only tell you the things that are out there. And the truth is, we don't know for sure what's going to happen. I mean, they haven't even signed the deal yet. And then they haven't had the negotiation that follows the signing of the deal. And then we haven't had the enforcement of the agreement that follows the negotiation that follows the signing of the deal. Right, John, right?
Correct.
You want to say all that again yourself?
No.
Okay.
I was trying to list down the points with my fingers.
But, you know, as is often the case in international affairs, I'll get back to you in 6 or 10 or 20 years. You know, I know that's not the most satisfying perspective in the world, but what do you want me to say? Woo-hoo or boo? I mean, like, you know, we don't know. We don't know a lot different than we knew on Friday, but, you know, we're closer. And by the way, a temptation would be to describe this as a win because at least the hostilities have ended. Well, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, let's say 6 months ago, let's go say, you know, we didn't have hostilities. So the real question is, don't compare where we are now or where we will be in a month to where we were, say, a week ago from today. The real question is to compare where we are in a month or two to where we were in December, right? I mean, that's the real comparison. What did the decision to go to war change in Iran or change globally or regionally? That's going to be the question. So it is tempting. Remember, it is tempting to think, oh, man, we finally got a deal. We finally got peace. Well, we had that. I mean, we didn't have a good deal. We didn't have a good peace, but we did have that before, right? It's kind of like when you start a problem and then you solve the problem, you don't get to say, well, hey, I solved the problem. Well, yeah, but you started it. You know, so we need to go back to the status quo before you started the problem to see if we're better off. I would say we're better off, generally speaking, mostly because their defensive capability to protect their nuclear program has been massively degraded. And because we've set the precedent that we're willing to use force under these circumstances, which I think are justified. Those are two good things. We've certainly delayed their ability to develop a nuclear program. That's a good thing. A lot of bad things. Lost lives, both sides. Lost money, both sides. Lost economic value in the world. I mean, you know, those aren't good. So, you know, like I said, we'll see. 520 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
This is the story of the one. The one who keeps multiple buildings running smoothly day after day. Plumbing that flows, HVAC that hums, cleaning supplies that keep surfaces sparkling. That's why she counts on Grainger. With easy reordering online and 24/7 support, Grainger helps her keep the products she needs on hand. So shelves stay stocked and buildings stay ready. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 28th to Pensacola Beach. This is the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference. Get connected with top experts and explore the cutting-edge trends shaping our future. From AI to robotics to national security and healthcare tech. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Don't miss out. Secure your tickets today at itenwired.com.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft.
Oh no.
That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Save up to 30% with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Talking about it. We're talking about it.
The midterm elections.
Who will win? Who will not?
It'll all be covered on News Radio 92.3.
Now, what's all this nonsense about you ain't going to California?
Ain't no nonsense to it. If the good Lord had a wanted me in California, he'd have put me in California.
Here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Right, John? Everybody sings that.
I did it too.
Everybody
yes.
sees Susanna Hoff with her eyes going back and forth. Everybody does the hands, you know. Yeah. The only reason we weren't doing our hands is because his hands on that control board, my hands on this computer. So, you know, we did it in spirit. We did it in spirit. Okay, now, John, were you watching the NBA finals much or at all?
Not really.
Yeah, me either.
I
literally fast forwarded through the greatest comeback in NBA history when the when the Knicks got that. What were they down 27 16. And they came back? Yeah, and
they thought it was 16.
No, it was more than that. Oh. 27, I believe. And they came back and won, and that was crushing for our boss. Also, other Spurs fans, but they won, of course, on Saturday night. But I would have been following it more had I known. Mitchell Robinson. That name ring any bells for you? You've lived here a long time. I haven't lived here nearly as long. Mitchell Robinson, he played for Pine Forest for 2 years. And he was not a starter for the Knicks, but he was one of their key guys that would come in off the bench. And he was in, you know, he played at Pine Forest, and then he switched to Chalmette, is that how you say it, in Louisiana, Chalmette High School. I never know how Cajuns are going to say their French words.
I know.
you just have to know or else you're going to get it wrong. So all year long, he had, let's see, during the playoffs, he had 4.8 points on average and 5.5 rebounds. So, you know.
Still.
That's pretty good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a lot of contribution. And then, you know, he played his first 2 years of high school at Pine Forest, final 2 years in Louisiana at, I'm going to say Chalmette, because that's probably how they would say it, and the French would say it. Anyway, he showed pro potential in middle school. He was 6'8" in the eighth grade.
Goodness. Can you imagine that?
We're going to put you in one of the top lockers, sir.
Yeah, I mean, we are. Don't worry about the bottom one.
He was named the PNJ second team All-Area as a sophomore. He didn't play, he skipped the freshman team for Pine Forest. Clayton Brown, his AAU coach, told the PNJ in 2018, this is a PNJ story, one thing I can say about it is he was dedicated to getting better. He was a five-star recruit in his final 2 years at Chalmette. Then McDonald's All-American, ranked number 11 in the overall player in 2017. But he never played college ball. Basically went, he had a suspension for violating team rules, sitting out a year preparing for the NBA draft, and eventually went into the NBA draft in 1984. The only other...
84?
Yeah. So he's been playing... He was the first player to be in the draft since 84 when 76ers took Booker T. Washington grad Tom Sewell, 22nd overall.
Okay.
So we haven't had a lot of basketball players in the NBA, apparently, or at least not in the draft. So anyway, 5.5 points during the year, 8.8 rebounds on average, 19 minutes per game. So, I mean, a game is 60 minutes, so he's playing 20 minutes. You know, he's not like a scrub. I mean, he's a really big contributing player. So we get down to 26 seconds in the game on Saturday night. This is all build up to this. 26 seconds to the game, and the Knicks are up by 3, and they've got, you know, one free throw has already been made by, I had it in my notes right here. All these players are alien names to me, so I don't, Josh Hart, I want to get it wrong. Josh Hart made one. There's 26 seconds left, and, you know, you've got Robinson is in on the offensive glass for this. They're 26 seconds left, and the Knicks are up by 3, okay, with the second half of a two-shot to go.
Hart, who was so upset when he missed that layup in game 4, a chance with a huge free throw here to put the Knicks up 4. Didn't expect a timeout here for San Antonio. Going too strong. Robinson, the rebound, back out to Charlotte. Now they have the foul. And a foul, Mitchell Robinson, with one of the biggest offensive rebounds in Knick history.
One of the biggest offensive rebounds in NBA history right there.
He got the offensive board. He got shoved right before the ball got up to the hoop and got pushed away. There were 4 Spurs under the basket. It's a, you know, free throw situation. You expect the other team to get the rebound. He somehow shoves in there and gets it out of 4 other Spurs and then pushes it back out, and then they get fouled again. So now the Knicks are up by 3, but with the ball and another set of free throws, which they then made one, went up 4, and then and the Spurs came back and got 2, and then there was some back and forth, and eventually you had the game winner by the, basically nothing happened in the last, 12, 15 seconds, something like that. But it was, you know, fun to listen to, and the Knicks winning for the first time in 53 years after the rebound that was crucial by Mitchell Robinson.
Puts it up, off the mark, Ananobi the rebound.
Burn those buses. Go ahead and turn those cars over. Go ahead and get drunk and naked in the street. Did any of that happen? All of that happened. Why is it that we've come to expect and allow that as the normal when people win championships? It's insane. It's really insane. But it's amazing that, you know, we kind of, okay, well, they won, so time to, you know, destroy some things. Like, I don't know how we got here exactly in America, but there you go. Anyway, congratulations to Pensacola native Mitchell Robinson. 2 years at Pine Forest, and now he's an NBA champion for the Knicks. Well done. And like I said, crucial rebound at a key point in the game. Had he not gotten that, I mean, you know, who knows what would have happened. But he did, so that's what we know. 437-1620. Oh, interesting. The primaries are now set, right? Which means that, you know, people who are going to get elected have already been put on the ballot. And there's some interesting notes on all of this. We find, you know, qualifying ended on Friday. You have a lot of no competition races. I think there's only one Escambia County GOP primary race. Like, that's super unusual. We have District 2, which is going to be Mike Kohler against Glenn Dorsey. I think it's the only primary. I don't think there's any other. You know what? Might be District 1 Congress is also going to be a primary. But I guess District 2 for the state rep is also a primary. I was thinking countywide. But, yeah, so there's a couple of races. And then, of course, we're going to have the referendum on whether to go appointed or elected, which means that Democrats aren't going to be showing up to vote unless they go specifically to vote for that one thing. So I guess the school board is going to get its – well, the three members of the school board who voted for that, Kevin Adams, Paul Fetsko, and who's the – I always want to forget the fifth one's name. It was not David Williams, and it was not Carissa Bergosh. They voted against having it at the primary. They wanted it at the general election. Anyway, so the rest of the elections are all basically going to be at the general election in November, other than House, you know, U.S. House, which is going to be Jimmy Patronis, John Frankman, and Douglas Chico are going to be running in that, you know, for Republicans. I guess we have some statewide races that are going to have primaries as well. We'll talk about those throughout the morning. But, yeah, U.S. Senate, governor, things like that, those are also going to be in primaries.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa, President Trump of Truth Social, posting about the peace agreement with Iran. This great deal will bring peace and security to the whole region. But it didn't come without some tense moments, as Fox's Trey Inks from Tel Aviv explains.
Before the deal was signed, it was nearly derailed. The Israelis targeted Hezbollah with strikes in the Lebanese capital of Beirut. Iranian officials immediately vowed to respond with missile fire toward Israel.
Vice President J.D. Vance spells out what happened next on Fox's The Big Weekend Show.
They assured us that they are not going to respond to the Israelis, and they were going to sign this agreement and get to peace.
Signing ceremony set for Friday in Switzerland. Oil prices down big this morning. President Trump is traveling to the massive three-day G7 summit that takes place in France. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. It's 82 degrees, cloudy skies. We'll get a look at our forecast here in just a few minutes. Well, three people were taken to the hospital Saturday following a Pensacola Beach water rescue. Six people were in the water in the Park East area just past Portofino when that incident happened Saturday afternoon. Escambia EMS, lifeguards, and fire rescue responded. Initially, a life flight helicopter was called, but it was later canceled. Two adults and one child were taken to the hospital. There's no current update on their conditions. A 47-year-old Pensacola man is facing an attempted homicide charge after allegedly beating another man over the head with a baseball bat. William Arney was arrested Saturday behind the Publix on Mobile Highway. This was more than a week after an attack that happened June 6th on London Avenue. Deputies say they found the victim on the ground bleeding heavily with multiple head injuries and broken bones. The victim told deputies that Amy had attacked him when he went outside to restore power to his home. A bat with dried blood was later found in a nearby backyard. Amy's being held without bond. A Pace man facing 11 charges of sexually abusing children under the age of 12. Bradley Kremians was arrested on Tuesday on 5 counts of sexual battery, 5 counts of molestation, and 1 count of showing obscene material to a minor. Both victims reported the alleged abuse to authorities in May. Investigators say the incidents spanned several years, with one victim's abuse allegedly beginning in 2018, the others continuing through last fall. Kremians denies all allegations. He's being held without bond. Governor DeSantis says Florida is stepping up its fight against Medicaid fraud with a new round of reforms aimed at catching bad actors and tightening oversight. The governor says the state is changing how it monitors providers and who gets to stay in the program.
Buckle up. Some of these guys that aren't behaving well, you know, they're going to have a lot more to deal with these new reforms.
And one of the big changes is a statewide revalidation effort for all active Medicaid providers. They'll be required to verify their identity and their credentials. State officials say providers that do not comply could be removed from that program. Florida Senator Rick Scott says any deal with Iran must meet several non-negotiables. Appearing on Fox News Saturday, Scott said Iran cannot be allowed to have nuclear weapons or ballistic missiles and must stop funding proxy groups like Hamas. Scott added that verification is critical, saying the deal means nothing if the U.S. cannot confirm that Iran is complying. It's 534 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our forecast from Channel 3 and Brooke Richardson.
Warm and muggy to kick off the new work week. Temperatures first thing on your Monday morning, starting out in the 70s and even lower 80s. Going into the afternoon, highs climbing to the upper 80s and low 90s with the chance for some showers and thunderstorms this morning and into the afternoon. Going into tonight, storms and showers do remain possible with lows in the 70s. And into Tuesday, showers stay in the forecast.
It is 82 degrees right now. We've got cloudy skies. Your next news in 30 minutes and breaking news anytime it happens. This is News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer announced this morning that his country will ban social media from offering services to kids under 16 years old. The ban could include platforms like Snapchat, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and X. Asian tech stocks surged this morning as investors celebrate the news that Iran and the U.S. have reached a deal to end the Middle East conflict. Japanese tech investor SoftBank was the best performer, jumping 10% higher. Tokyo Electron and Advantest added 7% and nearly 7.7%, respectively. AI giant Anthropic says it has taken its latest artificial intelligence models, known as Fable 5 and Mythos 5, offline to comply with a directive from the Trump administration to prevent their use by foreign nationals. The export controls mark the U.S. government's most significant step to date to restrict access to the most advanced AI models. Futures are moderately higher after President Trump announced an Iran peace deal to end the war. That's Your Money Now.
Did you know? Economic development is not about slogans. It is about outcomes. Florida West Economic Development Alliance works to recruit and support businesses that generate high-wage jobs, significant capital investment, and long-term tax base growth. That means stronger public services and a more competitive Escambia County without raising taxes. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 91% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for the summer and fall semester. Go to pensacolastate.edu. That's pensacolastate.edu to learn more.
Join Chris Roney from Ace Unlocks Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Chris will be sharing his years of expertise in the field of locksmithing and will discuss topics like security benefits of having your home or business locks inspected and resecured, smart locks, and even reprogramming your car's ECU computer for a lost key fob. Wednesday on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions.
No opinions, no arguing, just the news, right now.
Our Northwest Florida Congressman Jimmy Patronis says the Sunshine Protection Act, which would make daylight savings time permanent, has made more press in Congress than ever before.
I personally think you'll see something happen with that, you know, before the end of the summer.
The bill would eliminate the twice-yearly clock change.
Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Machine. I knew he must have been about 17.
Good morning, 5:39 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. I'm here with John Pickens. And we have some interesting kind of like study, tech, health update sort of stuff. And one of them is, do you remember, John, we were talking about this last week, how there's been two studies come out show that basically, you know, people are having less sex because they're having more phones. Like where they had, where we introduced smartphones, you know, AT&T, but they did a study and they look back at when, you know, the smartphones first came out, and in counties where they had smartphones, the birth rate plunged. And if the birth rate plunges, that means that the sex rate has plunged. That's, don't mean to explain the world to you, but that's how that works. And so they were having fewer babies because people had their smartphones, which you're like, well, how does that? No, because like one of the best forms of contraception is the cell phone, the smartphone. Because you're scrolling instead of...
Oh, I was just like, whoa, wait a second, Andrew.
Well, you know, when you spend a lot of time scrolling, you don't spend a lot of time... I don't know. You pick your word, okay? So,
but I'm just...
It's kind of like, you know, this is long known that one of the best forms of contraception is to have a TV in your bedroom. Because you watch TV and then you fall asleep and you don't do other stuff. That's why you shouldn't have a TV in your bedroom. Because it'll get in the way of other stuff, right? Okay, so I mean, I don't. You look like you've never heard this before, John. You never heard this.
I'm like,
no, it's. Yeah, I mean, it's not because
completely
you
off.
Actually, create something that makes you infertile. Although the effect is the same. Like if you took a very effective contraceptive, or you got a free TV in your bedroom, same effect. So that's why TVs in the bedroom are a bad thing. In any case, same thing or similar effect when it comes to cell phones. When everybody's using cell phones and you've had a whole technological culture around that develop with social media, because that's obviously came after the cell phone or the smartphone came out. But the ability to watch TV on your phone, the ability to scroll social media on your phone, the ability to get your news, to chat, to text, to, you know, all the stuff you do on your phone collectively means that you don't have as much sex as a culture. So we have kids who are not out making babies that they're not married and they shouldn't be making to begin with. We have older folks not making babies in marriage because, again, cell phone or smartphone, should say. Now, generally speaking, you would say, well, that's not good because, you know, we need children. Marriages need children. People need to be having sex in order to have good marriages. But there is an unintended byproduct, like triple backflip, maybe call it an advantage. Teenagers are not having sex in part because of smartphones and in part because of gaming and, you know, the shift in our society away from in-person anything. And because teenagers aren't having sex, teenagers aren't, John?
They're not having babies.
That's it.
Early.
Yeah. So historically, I have always argued, and I will continue to do so, that you should not get your kids' smartphones, because then they get social media, then they get YouTube, then they get, you know, they get all the stuff that comes with smartphones. And that's bad for your kids. It's bad for them for the bad content. It's bad for them for the brain effect. It's bad for them for the addiction and the impact on interpersonal relations. It's like across the board, it's bad. You know, Britain just banned social media for their 16-year-olds. Australia has already done it. We're going to be the slowest ones to do it. And we've kind of tried to do it here, but we're not doing a very effective job of it. I completely agree. No social media for anybody. I mean, probably anybody under the age of 40. but, you know, what can you do in practice? 16, at least. And the best, you know, one of the great ways to not have social media for 16-year-olds is to not have smartphones for 16-year-olds. They don't need a smartphone. A dumb phone is plenty enough, and I'm not even sure they ought to have that. But, you know, anyway, the point is, if you wanted to make the case for smartphones for kids, the way you'd make it is you say, it's a very good contraceptive, you know, which it is. Of course, the trade-off there is you're interfering with them having sex with each other and making unwanted babies, but you're also facilitating the prospects of, you know, bullying and body anxiety and exposure to all kinds of weird things, including predators and other people who might want to do horrible things to your children or even do consensual things with your children that you shouldn't have them doing, just in a much lesser degree than they would do in a world where they just didn't have smartphones at all. So, you know, kind of a follow-up again to a story we did last week where we talked about how, you know, phones get in the way of people having sex, which is bad, except if they're teenagers and you want to get in the way of them having sex, in which case it's actually sort of a benefit, which I hate to say out loud. Fourth reason, but, you know, you got to be honest about where the evidence leads. Remote work is bad for you. Why is remote work good for you? John, what would the argument there be typically?
Well, you don't have to change clothes. You can just stay in your night clothes.
It's comfortable. It's relaxing. It's easy. You get to sleep more and you get to snack when you want and go to the bathroom when you want. Nobody complains about you smoking in your office, right? You know, all the things. Well, it's not quite that simple. The problem with remote work is that you don't engage with other people. And you know, the funny thing about human beings is we need other people. We are social creatures. And so the big surge in remote work, 7% of U.S. workers in 2019, 28% in 2023 post-COVID, is part of the larger rise in psychological distress, depression, anxiety, isolation, all the things that come with it. So you have mental health professionals and, you know, they prescribe a medication for you when the real prescription should be go to work, hang out with people. Be annoyed by your coworkers. Have conversations with them. And though I'm reluctant to say it as I sit here in my flip-flops and my shorts and my cargo shorts and my T-shirt, dress up for work. Get dressed. Whoa. Take a shower.
You said get dressed up for work?
I'm saying the sloth life of remote work. Why are you looking at my feet, John?
Nothing.
Hey, the fact that I can work in beach attire is a perk of being in radio, you know? But the point is, when I come to work, I see people. Some of them I like. Some of them I see. That's okay. That's normal. You interact with other people, perhaps not the most charitably, while you're driving and complimenting them on their good driving habits, or at least you're commenting.
You're interacting, right.
There's something about getting out of the house. There's something about being around other people. There's something about working on projects and seeing people face-to-face, which is not just from a productivity standpoint better, but from a psychological health standpoint better. Like, work is good for you. Think about, this is broad strokes, but, you know, think about one of the challenges of having stay-at-home moms who don't see other women or people other than their kids all day long. Is that the best for them? If you've ever had a wife who was staying home with the kids and the young kids, what you discover is that kids are exhausting and not particularly rejuvenating. And so, you know, when you come home, when I would come home, I'd have to, you know, give my wife adult companionship and talk and, you know, un-gaslight her from the things that kids do to gaslight you all day long. I mean, just, it's something that, same basic problem in a different form. You need other moms. You need adult conversation. You need something other than those children. Because even though the children are a kind of stimulation, okay, they're not always the best for it. You know, why do women have depression issues sometimes? Not always. Why do they have, all kinds of psychological distress, sometimes not always. Well, because, you know, you're not engaging with other people. We need that. Everybody needs it. So remote work is not facilitating this healthy thing. It is interfering with it. It's one of the additional consequences of the fact that we're not going to work anymore. And also Andrew's, you know, like I would be at home just wearing, you know, no shoes at all. And here I am wearing some shoes.
At least.
Which is better for me. No, I always think about this with my wife because I have the opportunity when I go to work, like I get out of the house and get to talk to people a lot. You know, I obviously do the show where I'm talking a lot, but, you know, mostly that's just me talking. But then John gives me feedback and you give me feedback. And then there's coworkers, you bump into them and we make jokes. My wife doesn't get that benefit a lot of the time. And that can cause her distress. And so it's just really thinking about what we need as human beings. We need socializing. And remote work gets in the way of that. 548 on News Radio 92.3. So what do we learn? Remote work is bad for your mental health, and smartphones are contraceptives.
Hey, Kevin, how's the boat running? Well, you know, last week I started working on the water pump and now I can't remember how it goes back together.
Dude, stop. Call Key Marine. They'll get you and your Mercury outboard back in the water so we can go back to fishing again.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. They'll fix any problem, big or small, even if the problem is you don't remember how the parts go back together. Key Marine, your Mercury outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola.
At FPL, our teams are working every day, inspecting, upgrading, and strengthening the grid, installing smart sensors that spot problems before they become outages, keeping your lights on, your devices charged, your world running. You may not see us, but our work never stops. Behind every switch that powers on, every moment that just works. Because reliability isn't an option, it's a commitment. FPL, working for you every single day. Learn more at fpl.com/value.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
Pensacola's hurricane coverage headquarters is News Radio 92.3 with wall-to-wall coverage before, during, and after storms.
I haven't the faintest idea why I agreed to this. I must be malfunctioning.
Forever, I will remember this song as the song that made me punch my buddy at the Robert Plant concert.
Why did you punch him?
Unintentionally.
But you it was still assault, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, battery. Okay. So we went to see Robert Plant in concert, and my friend is, I mean, he was like 6'2", and I'm me. And,
and you're not, yeah.
Yeah, and... So Robert Plant was playing Robert Plant music, primarily, his solo work. And this has always been one of my very favorite Led Zeppelin songs, Nobody's Fault But Mine. And so you never know what songs from the band library and a solo artist is going to do. And so when, you know, if they do like Stairway to Heaven or something, yeah, okay, sure. But this is kind of an out-of-the-way song for Led Zeppelin fans. It's a great one, but, you know, it's what, off of Presence, I think. Anyway, and it came on and, you know, he goes into it. I'm like, woohoo! And I... threw my arms up and I punched him right in the mouth. Unintentionally. I felt so... I'm lucky I didn't break my hand or his mouth, you know, either one. So, and he was like, lucky. Why did you do that? I said, I'm so sorry.
You're lucky he didn't beat the...
No, well, there's that too. Yeah, but Bob Anderson was a really nice guy. He would never do anything like that. He's a sweetheart.
You hit me. We're going to have words.
552 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, somebody texts me and says, without social media, how would we know about the German soccer fan discovering all the joys of Middle America like Waffle House and Walmart and Bucky's? Have you seen this at all?
No.
Yeah, there's a German soccer fan that's going around and, you know, Bucky's, what is this? And they're like, he's seeing, you know, oh my God, this is a gas station, you know, with like 100 lanes or whatever. And oh my God, look at all this cereal and, you know, which we're used to, sort of. You know, but people from other places,
they're like,
oh my God, what's it's not quite like when somebody escapes a communist country and comes to America and can't believe this is not what they said, you know, but it's sort of like that, right? When you come from Germany to come here, it's a little step up in quality of life and affordability and variety, certainly variety, and not always up. I mean, look at our TV. It's not so great. Anyway, if you are a business and you have employees, and you have to deal with things like health insurance and dental and vision, life, disability, managing HR, doing payroll. Hey, Torgerson Consulting is there for you to do that. In fact, you know, it's interesting. City Council meeting in Milton, Reed Torgerson was presenting to them a contrasting set of all the different plans that they have access to as they're getting ready to renew their insurance. And This plan will cost you this much more. This plan will cost you this much less. This plan is a good first year, but we don't know what they'll do when we renew. We're in this other plan right now. Anyway, just, you know, he did a great job of explaining to them their options, and that's the point. He's the same person that we work with for our insurance here at News Radio and Cat Country for about 5 years. And they're very knowledgeable, very detailed, very good at finding the best plans available. Again, I like to tell people they're not miracle workers. They can't make the plans happen, but they're very good at sorting through them and helping you understand what's good for your employees. They've been in business for more than 25 years. It's no obligation to have them come look at what you're doing. 433-9996 for Torgerson Consulting, or check them out online at tcbenefitsgroup.com. 554 here. Don't you dare mouth my words, John. He sits over here and he spins his pen and distracts me. He sits over here and he finishes my ad sentences and it distracts me. It's great producing, by the way. It's hilarious. I can never complain about the pen spinning thing because I'm a pen spinner and I've been doing it since high school. And if there's, of all the things that I do that aggravate my wife, if she could fix any one thing about me, I'd like to believe what she would fix would be the pen spinning, but it is the one where I spin it once and she's like, stop.
You get it after one?
Yeah.
Does she not take the pen out of your hand?
Oh, I mean, touch me, please.
Please,
no,
honey.
No, she just, she gives me the stink eye. I mean, she gives you gives me the look, and then she'll say, Andrew, because I don't know I'm doing it. I'm doing it without thinking about it. And she knows that it's unconscious. And so, but I know, I know because I'll look at, because you know, like you can tell when your spouse breathes a certain way, you know what they're thinking. And you know, like, for example, if they, and then they don't say something, they were going to say something. And so then you ask, what? Right? Because that's, when you know somebody so well, you know all. What's that?
I'm trying to be nice. I'm not going to say anything.
Right, and then they're like, nothing. Like, well, you breathe.
Nothing. Yeah.
You know, well, you got to hide your thoughts better than that in the future. You got to not breathe so clearly. 4-3-7-16-20. Oh my goodness. Oh, we talked about this a little bit last week, but we've got some of the details now. It's sort of interesting. You know, the lawsuit over the property tax referendum. This is the one that would increase the homestead exemption on the county or city, county and city slice of your taxes, not the school slice of your taxes. The one that we're going to vote on in November. We've had 1,000 conversations about this already, and we're going to have 5,000 more before November. Dramatic cut to your property taxes, not an elimination of them. Also a dramatic cut to city and county budgets, not to the state budget, right? That's the short version of this. Well, the lawsuit is to declare that it's a misleading language. And that essentially, it wouldn't get it off the ballot. All it would do would be to get the language be more appropriate. And I had thought it was going to be because there were things in the language that are not in the actual ballot, ballot amendment. Actually, it's a little different than that. I was reading a really good story from the News Service of Florida about that. The group is called Save Our Voters from Misleading Ballot Language. And it's former mayors, former mayor of Stewart and a former mayor of Key Biscayne. And essentially what they say is the ballot summary has three different elements that are political in nature, as in they're advocating for something as opposed to informational in nature. It's just supposed to tell voters what's in there and not put loaded language in there to try to get them to like the ballot amendment. So, for example, ensuring funding for core services. Yeah, I mean, that's not neutral. That's advocacy. That's an ad, right? But also, because there is going to be a property tax revenue loss and there is no guarantee that the core services will be protected, the amendment fundamentally does not accomplish the thing that it says it does. It's both advocacy, which is bad, and also misleading, which is bad. Certainly, public safety could get cut. There is no built-in protection. The closest thing is a list of approved uses for ad valorem funding, general revenue. But even that is pretty fluid because they added this other language that allows almost anything that they vote for. There's a second one, the phrase protecting small businesses, which is theoretically because it will cap the Save Our Homes that applies to your house at 3% property value going up per year is on commercial or non-residential is 10% right now. You know, for example, we have our house, we have a rental house. Our rental house has caught up to its market value. Our house is nowhere close to its market value because of the 3 versus the 10. Well, they're going to cut that in half to 5%. That's part of the amendment. But cutting the increase in the valuation of the property from 10 to 5 doesn't have anything to do specifically with small businesses. It doesn't do anything for their ability to operate, and it certainly doesn't protect renters. I mean, there's so much more involved in small business. There's nothing specific about that in the amendment. That's what their argument is. Also, the third piece is that you will eventually eliminate all non-homestead school property taxes, non-school property taxes. We'll see. The actual proposed amendment requires you to have a discussion about it afterwards, that there's a study to take place after the initial 250. So the lawsuit is kind of interesting. It's not just specifically on the things in the ballot summary that are not even at all in the amendment. It's about how it's misleading and that it's advocacy rather than just a neutral description. If they win this lawsuit, it wouldn't mean that the thing goes off the ballot. It would mean that Attorney General James Uthmeyer, my hero, whatever. Anyway, that he would have to amend the ballot summary to get one that would be acceptable to the Supreme Court, basically. So, we'll see what happens with all that.